One, buyers and sellers in the government IT business finally have a structure on making the process better. ACT-IACT is facilitating the Better Government IT Working Group. Its industry co-chairs Jaime Gracia, president and CEO of Seville Government Consulting, and he's here to tell you about what the working group is doing. Jaime, first, before we get to that, I must call attention to the fact that it just seems like about half of the posts that you put on Facebook are very interesting government IT and acquisition topics, and about half of them have to do with the Yankees, and it just drives me absolutely crazy.
Well, I'm sorry about that, and I do apologize to the Red Sox fans out there.
Well, what about guys like me that grew up Orioles fans and have you keep rubbing all those rings in my nose?
Well, let's apologize about that, too.
No, it's nothing to be ashamed of. And the stuff that you put up about what's going on in the world of federal business and government business is really interesting stuff. Talk about this working group, who's involved in it, and what you're looking to get out of it.
Well, this group is co-sponsored by ACT-IACT, and it's a joint venture between ACT-IACT, OMB, OFPP, and GSA. And our charge really is working with these federal organizations to pinpoint points 24 and point 25 of Vivek Kundra's 25-point reform memo that came out in December to really try to improve government-industry relations and, more importantly, to try to improve the process really for requirements development, pre-acquisition phase, and the needs identification phase for procurement. But also what we're trying to do is expand that platform to really focus on government-industry relations throughout the life cycle of a program. So we're certainly focused on trying to get buyers and sellers together early to share better information about technology, to find ways that government and industry can work better together. What we're really looking for is a platform for best practices so we can share that throughout government and really find ways to not only produce better requirements, overall better program outcomes.
Where are you in the timeline of this? Are you just setting up? Are you starting to get feedback and consider solutions, or where are you?
Yes. We actually just had our first kickoff meeting last Friday where we just had basically a brainstorming meeting about some of the outcomes that we hope to do. We talked about basically creating those best practices deliverables. So what we're going to be doing in the next few months is continuing that brainstorming meeting and meeting with OMB and OFPP and GSA on kind of some of our ideas on ways that we can improve government-industry relations and make sure that we're all in sync about what we're trying to do so we can add value, essentially, to these programs and really focus on performance, communications, and help government management as a whole.
I'm particularly interested in what you come up with for item 25, the collaborative part of this, because every Thursday I have somebody in here from industry, and they say both on the air and off the air, we want to be able to participate in these in some kind of a way that we can give our feedback, that the agencies know that we're somebody who's qualified to give this feedback, that we can speak candidly, but yet we can do it also without giving away any trade secrets, essentially, is what they're getting at. Not always said in so many words. Do you see there are some possibilities there for that being able to happen?
Right, absolutely. And that's been pretty much the feedback that we've gotten as well, because industry certainly wants to help shape those communications. However, they want to try to do it in a way that adds value, but of course does not give away proprietary information that would put them at a competitive disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly a requirement that we've gathered. That's being worked at GSA. Mary Davyshop is leading that, and we're working with her and her team to do that. But that's it's certainly undefined at this point, because our charge really was to try and find ways to be open and transparent. However, that is a urgent need that's required, and certainly those one-on-one sessions are a valuable way for industry and government to communicate. So we certainly don't want to lose focus on that, but we're certainly trying to find ways to incorporate that feedback and really get the ball going on that initiative.
On item number 24, that's the Mythbusters campaign. I don't think anybody could deny that Dan Gordon hasn't been out there pounding the pavement, talking to just about anybody that will have him about the Mythbusters campaign and what agencies can and can't do and what vendors can and can't do and what, in fact, beyond that, not only what they can do but what they should be doing. What value do you see being able able to add to that conversation as time progresses, and maybe some of the things that Dan Gordon's out there talking about fade from memory, as people have a tendency to forget things that are not pounded in their brains over and over again.
Right. I mean, the Mythbusters campaign, Dan Gordon, like you mentioned, is doing a wonderful job trying to break the ice of just basic best practices for communications, and that's an ongoing initiative that will continue. And really what we're trying to do with this initiative is get those best practices in market research and communications with industry and between government. We're also trying to focus on best practices for requirements development, like I mentioned, writing requests for proposals and statement of works. And we are trying to put together a comprehensive package of best practices for communications with industry and government holistically. So that will be an ongoing campaign. And really, like any initiative with government, one of the big issues there, obviously, is the culture. Because right now, certainly, there's a culture of an arm's-length relationship. And we really have to try and find ways so we can be more strategic between government and industry to really build those partnerships, which are going to add a lot of value to programs, find better outcomes, and ultimately be better stewards of the taxpayer funds.
Well, as I mentioned, I talk to vendors pretty regularly, and every one of them says, listen, we understand that we can't do business the same way with the government that we do in the private sector. There are regulations, and they're there for a reason, but they want that interaction just as much as government does. So I'll look forward to having you keep us posted on how you find that middle ground, how you find that balance that works for both sides.
Absolutely, and it's absolutely vital for us to really find ways to improve communications, because right now, FAR Part 10 and market research says pretty much it's wide open. But certainly what we're trying to do is find ways to provide that guidance to kind of take it to another level and make sure that government and industry are really having productive communications, that regulations and laws certainly aren't violated. But we just have to do a better job to not only build requirements to continue that conversation, really have better outcomes. And that's really what the Better Government IT is all about.
Jaime, thanks for being on the program to talk about this today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Frank.
Jaime Gracia is industry co-chair of the Better Government IT Working Group and president and CEO of Seville Government Consulting. You can find out more about the Better Government IT Working Group, which is facilitated by ACT-IAC, OMB, and other organizations, as Jaime mentioned, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It's 4:38 on In Depth with Francis Rose. Coming up, a shorter hiring process may not necessarily be a sweeter hiring process. But first, at 40 minutes after the hour, your DoD report shifting from cyber defense to cyber offense. The Pentagon may be getting the green light. Details next at Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
For over 40 years, Mantech employees have been solving complex problems for the national security community. Whether they're providing secure satellite communications to the Department of Defense or investigating threats in cyberspace for intelligence agencies, their work is distinguished by high ethical standards and a deep commitment to their customers' success. They've created a culture that encourages individuals to bring innovative ideas and technology to those charged with protecting the homeland. Due to the high demand for Mantech skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals, security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. In 2010, Mantech was selected for Fortune Magazine's 100 Fastest Growing Companies list, named a top 10 best employer for veterans by Military Times Edge Magazine, and for the fourth year in a row, was selected as a top 10 military-friendly employer by GI Jobs Magazine. Apply for openings today at mantech.com/careers. That's mantech.com/careers. Mantech is an equal opportunity employer.
Don't miss the FPMI Human Capital Management Conference and Expo, June 13th through 16th in Tucson. After 22 years, FPMI has combined their Labor and Employee Relations Conference with their HR and EEO Conference to bring you one conference covering today's hot topics in the federal LR, ER, HR, and EEO fields. Over 70 sessions led by government leaders and industry experts. Join FPMI for 3 days of learning, networking, and exhibits. To register, visit fpmiconferences.com. That's fpmiconferences.com.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Christopher Smith, Chief Information Officer at the Department of Agriculture.
Cloud, it really is an opportunity, and it's changing rapidly still. And I think it's different parts of it that are mature that we've already leveraged, and those that are maturing at a lesser rate but moving even more rapidly are the ones we're watching and trying to figure out how do we leverage that. I mean, if you look at data center that was built 6-12 months ago versus one that's being built today, they're demonstrably different in that short amount of time.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
It's 4:40 on In Depth with Francis Rose. Now your Federal News Radio DOD report. Afternoons at 40 minutes after the hour. The Defense Department might start launching secret cyber operations against foreign targets. That ability is part of the 2012 Defense Authorization Bill in the House Armed Services Committee. The bill says military cyber activities have become critical to DOD's mission. We have your DOD report afternoons at 40 minutes after the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's 4:41. We're a year into the big reform of the federal hiring process. KSAs are mostly gone, at least at the beginning of the process. And OPM's driven a lot more changes, but it'll take more than that to keep top talent from slipping through the cracks. Tom Shoup is the editor-in-chief of Government Executive Magazine. And before we talk about that time, I wanted to ask you if you have plans for the weekend. I got two NASCAR tickets I would like to take you out to the race in Dover if you'd like to go with me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, as tempting as that is, my wife has made several appointments for me to mow the lawn and pull the weeds.
Oh, lucky you. So. You'd rather do that stuff than go to the NASCAR race?
You know, I can't say that I would.
Hmm.
Never having been to a NASCAR race. I'm going to take you up on this someday.
You asked me once to explain NASCAR to you, and this is your shot, and so I'm sorry that you're not going to be able to leverage that into an exciting opportunity. 89% of agencies getting rid of KSAs, and we're still getting a sense that there are some struggles out there in the hiring process, aren't we?
Yeah, I think it's because they're now starting to realize this is about more than just getting rid of KSAs. And, one of the interesting things is that effort has gone gangbusters, at least the evidence seems to be. But one of the things that came out this week is that agencies are not doing quite as well on writing their own job postings. So they're requiring less in terms of responses from applicants, but still generating these huge, sometimes as long as 30, 35-page job announcements listing all the requirements for the position. And so that's what OPM is starting to focus on. One of the things they're starting to focus on now is let's try to cut down on the size of those, too.
I'm amazed to see some of these sometimes, too. I mean, certainly the 35-pagers are the exception to the rule, but the multi-pagers are not out of the realm of normalcy, I don't think. I think that's fair to say. And yet, if you go on a site like Monster or something like that, and you look at some of the descriptions that are there, some of the postings that are there, there may be a page or a page and a half. And so it becomes, I understand there are things that have to be in some of these postings that do stretch them out, some regulatory stuff and so on.
Right.
But boy, oh boy, to have something stretch for as long as some of these, you wonder if anybody that applies actually read the thing.
Right. And you wonder if they've just sort of grown up year after year after year with things being added to
mm-hmm.
traditional language that just makes them bigger and bigger and bigger.
As far as keeping people interested in the hiring process, we're seeing a shortening of it a little bit, and you're reporting on that in Government Executive. But going from 160 days to 105 is good, but still not anywhere near where Director Barry said a number of times he wants to be. 80 days is the number that he cited.
And 80 days isn't exactly great by a private sector comparison, but that's where they're headed. And it's sort of interesting that, you know, that's what agencies are really focused on right now is getting that hiring time down because, you know, as I'm sure you know, what you're ordered, what you get told to measure is what do.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were told to get 80 days, they're aiming to get down to 80 days as soon as they can. But already OPM and others are starting to realize that, you know, it's not just about making the process faster. It's about getting high-quality candidates. You know, in a government that's downsizing and that may have fewer opportunities, it can't really afford to get it wrong on candidates. So you want to make sure you have a process in place by which you're identifying quality candidates, getting them through the door, and giving them the kind of experience that makes them want to stay, which is the other problem that, you know, you want to make sure that your retention numbers are such that, you know, people are interested in the job and engaged in the job and want to stay in government.
Well, and that means that some of your hiring problems go away because you're not having to do as much of it. You touch on something else there that I think is really critical, and then I wonder if it gets talked about enough, and that is the fact that you can hire somebody in 10 days, but if they're a knucklehead, they don't do you any good.
Yeah, that's right. Just getting it to, you know, just making it faster certainly doesn't solve all your problems. It clearly addresses the problem the government has that it tends to be slow as compared to the private sector, but it doesn't mean that you have a highly functioning workforce. What you need for that is to be doing a good job of identifying candidates, getting people through the pipeline, and giving them an experience that keeps them engaged.